Well, good evening. We're getting a little bit of a late start tonight for our city council meeting. We did have a closed session with a couple of items on it, and our city attorney will report back on the first item. I'll report on the second item. So we'll go ahead and first receive our closed session report before we go to council.
Right, there is nothing to report on the first item, the real property item.
Thank you. And the second item is we had a employee performance evaluation with our city attorney. And what often folks don't realize is the five of us only have two employees, the city manager and the city attorney. And everyone else reports to the city manager. And that works very well for all of you because we stick to policy level issues. And one thing, though, we like to do is kind of evaluate how we are doing with our two staff members. We've met with our city manager before. Reporting back on our city attorney, our staff pretty much have come to the same conclusion we have, is people are very pleased with the work product of our city attorney. We're always glad that we are not even in lawsuits, and if we are in any, we win. But we just are able to avoid legal issues because we try to do our policy correct as we go. And we're also very pleased not only with Mr. Pyrick's ability, but he comes from a firm that has very much depth of specialists. And there's a number of things we work on, whether it be the state's changes in marijuana law or any other categories. There's often one of the best in the state expert in the field in the area with his law firm, and he can draw on that expertise when we need it. So we're very pleased with that. And he's just a fun guy. He has got a sense of humor as an attorney, and he works very well with staff and with the public. And we aren't going to talk about his dancing, Heather, but that apparently is pretty good too.
Thank you for not talking about that.
Yes. So we'll conclude our report on the city attorney, but again, very pleased, and thank you for your service, Brian. We'll move on and call our regular session to order, and we usually begin with a few pages. Every now and then, I'm so used to doing these agendas, and every now and then the city clerk changes it a little bit, and I have to stare at it for a minute. What did you do here? But we're going to go ahead and begin with the Pledge of Allegiance, and I'm going to ask Mr. Wendell here. We have a relatively new resident here in our community, one of our local youth pastors. If you'd head over to the lectern and go ahead and lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. Notice that that's where the mic is for public comments, so now you'll have it. Be well prepared for the future. Next item is roll call.
Councilmember Burbo?
Here.
Councilmember Moreno?
Here.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzi is absent, and Mayor O'Malley?
Here. And next item is the approval of the agenda.
So moved. Second.
We have a motion to approve and second the. Go ahead with the roll call, please.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Councilmember Burbo?
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
Motion passes 4-0.
Thank you. And in case you're not looking at an agenda, the next things we have on the agenda will be a presentation, then the consent calendar, then we'll go to updates from the city manager, then we go to community forum and on. So it's my honor to next present the presentation on the 2018 Wine Speak recap, and I believe Kristen Curtis is here. Welcome.
Hi, thank you. Thanks for having me. Tom O'Malley said, my name is Christine Curtis, and I am the marketing coordinator for Ancient Peaks Winery and as well as Winespeak Paso Robles. I'm here on the behalf of Amanda Wickstrom Higgins. She is the founder of Winespeak Paso, but she is on a business trip to Napa Valley, so she wasn't able to make it tonight. But I'm excited to just tell you guys a little bit about Winespeak and how the event went this past January. Any of you don't know a lot about Winespeak, it was a three-day event here held here in Atascadero in the heart of the Paso Robles AVA for the wine industry. It was a three-day educational, very high-caliber seminar conference that we held, and there was a lot of very highly regarded people from the wine industry that attended, and so we actually held numerous seminars in this room, actually, that went through a lot of wines and really elevated the wine experience here for the Paso Robles region. And we also had a variety of master sommeliers and high caliber trade and media people that came to cover the event. So there was some really highly regarded people here, and we were really excited to have them. And we just really want to thank the city of Atascadero for helping us put this event on and actually really opening the doors for us to have these amazing venues to use for this event. It really spoke to the caliber of the event. We really felt like it elevated the event to be able to use all of our amazing resources here in the county. And the event was really, really an amazing event and really highly regarded in the community. So we really thank you, you guys, for helping us put it on. I have a whole entire presentation, but I'm not gonna go through it. I gave you guys some copies, but I really wanna put on our video so that everyone can see just a recap of the whole entire event. So.
So this experience so far, there's been a lot of highlights, but one that stands out is just having all these wine professionals together and making us feel a little bit like a community, like a family. I couldn't wait to get here. I couldn't wait to be a part of something new.
Seeing all of the amazing wine that was being poured and the community interacting with the wine that they were drinking and the people who were making it, and that was a really good reminder, kind of the purpose and the intention behind what we're doing.
I think this is a unique environment because you have consumers here, you have sommeliers here, you have vineyard managers and winemakers here, and I think a lot of events are either driven towards the production side or towards the consumer side or towards the sommelier side, and right now this seems that it's actually taking up pieces of all the segments and bring them all together to have an entire discussion about wine, not just one segment of the market.
The event with the BYOB brings you. There were so many great bottles there that told so many stories about the people that were in the room. And then to see us all sharing those bottles together, it was really priceless.
To listen to people, try new wines, try wines that you've tried before in a different aspect. Just the community spirit. It's inspiring.
I just got word during the video that you guys were actually the group that helped us put the tables and chairs back up in between some of our seminars. So thank you for helping us do that and just make the event so such an amazing event. So yeah, I just wanted to thank you. And we are planning on doing Winespeak Paso Robles again this January. We have it set for the 8th through the 10th midweek. So we're really excited, and we really thank you guys that you guys were a part of it. So.
Well, thank you. And I'll never forget getting a phone call the next day from my old high school friend, Doug Filipponi, and also Carl Wittstrom. They sounded like a couple of kids. They were so excited after this event. It was so well received because this was truly an international event. We had folks from all over, but certainly nationally renowned folks in the wine industry, and there were folks here that were basically owners of multiple five-star restaurants, and that was the comment that Doug was giving me feedback on, that there were a number of restaurateurs saying, we've got to open a restaurant in Atascadero. They were so surprised to see this beautiful city hall and the ability to put on seminars here using our Lake Pavilion and the Carlton Hotel. The whole cluster was very well put together. And thank you, Terry Banish, again for your assistance. But it was truly a community partnership. When you come to Atascadero, you not only get these great venues, you get teams, because you got the city working with the Chamber of Commerce, with the Tourism Business Improvement District Board, with the whole community, and that's why you had some folks helping to set up the chairs even at the events, because we all pitch in. But thank you. Let folks know we're really glad you chose to come back a second year, and we're excited about this activity as well. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. We have some really fun things planned for next year, so thank you.
Very good. Well, that was a great presentation. Give them a round of applause, after all. Next item is the consent calendar, made up of items considered to be routine in nature, don't need a lot of discussion. We can vote and approve them all together unless any council member or a member of the public would like to pull one for more in-depth discussion. Any member of the council wishing to pull an item? Any member of the public? Seeing none, I'd entertain a motion on the consent calendar.
Move approval of the consent calendar.
Second. I have a motion by Councilwoman Moreno, seconded by Councilmember Sturdivant. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Councilmember Berba?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you. We'll have updates from the city manager, but I want to put a little insert in here. Right after that, we'll go to community forum, which is an opportunity for any of you to speak to all of us on anything that's not on the agenda, and then we'll go on to individual topics. We're going to make an exception tonight. We do have an item later on the agenda regarding the general plan amendment for 5705 Almeda Avenue. That's not going to be heard tonight. We may give a little preference of that. So if you're here to speak on that specifically and would like to speak during the community forum time for the record and have your input put with that, it would allow you to leave earlier if you'd like. We'll still have to announce it and on the schedule as it is, but I'm going to ask our city clerk to kind of describe that, what will happen since it's not going to be heard tonight, and how that will be processed.
Sure. It was noticed as a public hearing, but it's not going to be presented tonight. It will be brought back to council at a future date, and prior to it being brought back to council, the neighbors will be noticed again as they were for this item.
Yes.
So they'll have notice again when it is planned for a council agenda, and they'll have the opportunity at that point to come and speak on the record again if they choose to speak tonight as well.
Yes, but anything they say tonight will be entered into the record and would carry forward.
Yeah, we'll make a note of it for that staff report and what comes back to the council.
Yeah, so sometimes when things are not entirely ready to go to the council, it is pulled for getting more information, but since it's noticed, we want to give you the opportunity to speak, and we're just giving you two opportunities during the community forum, and again, when we announce it, and that's all we would do is take public input. We wouldn't take any action tonight, and it'll be re-noticed in a formal hearing will happen in the future. So with that, we'll go to the updates from the city manager, then to community forum.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. So I have a few events to talk about tonight. Hopefully everybody has Friday, March 23rd through Sunday, March 25th, either free or booked with one of these fantastic events that we have going on. So I will start with Friday, March 23rd in the downtown. We're going to have our downtown art and wine tour. That is from 5:30 to 8 p.m. It is $20 per ticket, which includes your glass of wine, your wine glass itself, wine glass, wine tastings at all of the participating downtown merchants, and it includes tours of City Hall. take the tours and visit our merchants even without buying the, if you don't want to drink, you don't have to buy the $20 wine glass that gets you the free tastings at all of them. These were a lot of fun, especially just walking around our downtown, talking. They're very casual, and a great event put on by our downtown merchants and the chamber. On March 24th, Saturday, March 24th, we are going to have the Central Coast Craft Beer Fest. It starts, it's in the Sunken Gardens. VIP access is at 12 noon and includes early access to the festival and special beer and food pairings. General admission is from 1 to 4 p.m. Event will include live music, more than 40 breweries, plus 5 wineries and 2 cideries. It's presented by the Central Coast Brewers Guild, and this event is the official kickoff to Craft Beer Week, March 23rd through April 1st. I know that tickets for this event are being sold quickly, and maybe I can have Terry just very quickly disclose how to get them.
Terry Banish, of course. There's about 250 tickets left as I stand here today, so they're only allowing up to 1,200, and that's from 1 to 4 on Saturday. The VIP event is sold out, so get your tickets if you want to go, definitely.
And Terry, where would we buy those tickets from?
You would go on to the CentralCoastCraftBeerFest.com and buy them from there.
Thank you. Saturday, March 24th also kicks off our 2018 Spring Festival at the Charles Paddock Zoo. This is during regular zoo admission hours and is available for the price of admission to the zoo. It features our springtime backyard babies, so we have our chicks and small baby animals. It is always a favorite of the kids. It runs from March 24th through April 8th, so we invite everybody to bring their kids to the Charles Paddock Zoo, get to see all of the wonderful exotic animals that we have, along with some of our spring babies from the area. And on Saturday, or Sunday, March 25th, we have the 10th City Marathon. This is sponsored by the Tascadero Prinery Foundation. It is a fundraising event for the Prinery Foundation. It includes a 5K, a 10K, a half marathon, and full marathon, and a nun run distance. So if you just want the t-shirt and to hang out, you don't have to run a step if you don't want to. Or you can run up to the full marathon if you would like. It promises to be a fun event. This is the first time we've held this event, and we're very excited to have it here in Atascadero. There will be live entertainment, music, and an expo at the finish, so visit tentcitymarathon.com for more information. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions council may have.
Thank you. When you say nun run, you don't mean like a Catholic kind of a thing. You mean like non-run.
Yeah, it's a non-run. N-O-N-E, not N-U-N.
Non-run.
Although they would probably allow a nun run the other one, too.
I'm sure they could outrun me.
Probably true.
Very good. Thank you. Any questions from council? And I would point out, too, that the Tourism Business Improvement District also supported that marathon with a sizable contribution to help make that happen. And again, often a partnership with the city. Next item is the community forum, an opportunity for any of you to speak on anything you would like. Normally that's not on the agenda, but if you would like to speak to that one particular item that is on the agenda, you are welcome to at this time as well. Welcome back, Wendell.
Yeah, thank you. What am I supposed to state for the record other than my name?
You actually don't have to say anything other than pull the mic up because you're so darn tall and we want to make sure we get everything recorded, but it's feel free to say whatever you'd like.
Okay. Actually, what I would love to do is take a time to pray. Father, I thank you for this opportunity to meet and to gather and to discuss the things of your city. I pray that you knit our hearts and our minds together. Lord, that you bind us together in unity. All things spoken here, may they be spoken in sincerity and with humility.
Thank you. Welcome. Next speaker.
Good evening. I'm Jenny Tittlekim, and I am with the Atascadero Prairie Foundation. I shared with the city manager some of our flyers that we have. On the back of your flyer, we have an invitation to invite the city council to come and possibly present the awards to the winners of the race that we're going to be having on the 25th. I think that's about all, but I really appreciate your time, and thank you again for sharing our event later on this month. I appreciate it, and thank you for allowing us to have this race in the city. We appreciate it, all the support we can get. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm hoping I can present the awards to the non-runners, and let somebody like Heather do the real runners. That would be great. Question. Go ahead.
Question. What time would that be? I mean, since people finish at various times, what time would that awards presentation be?
Charles, do you mind if I get back to you
on
that?
Sure. No problem.
Because,
thank you.
Victoria's will know a time frame better than I would. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Welcome. Next speaker.
I'm Claire Irwin. I live on Olmeda Avenue, and I'm here to speak about the 5705 Olmeda Avenue General Plan Amendment. On the notice, as a neighbor, I am concerned for the safety of my community. The organization that does own the property does valiant work, very supportive of what they do, but I am not in support of them doubling or tripling their units in that area because of the high volume of police activity that we already have. Several young families live in the area with small children. It's right down the street from a school, the Fine Arts Academy, and the middle school. And in light of all of the situations that's happening across the country with school incidences, it does concern me that this particular housing placement program is for teens, or is for ages 18 to 24 young adults that are needing support, getting assimilated into our society. So we have a high volume of police activity that's already happening with the four units that are there. I can't imagine what type of police activity we would have in the neighborhood if we would double or triple the units. I'm not necessarily against having a different zoning there if it was a different owner, but this is providing affordable housing or granted housing to these youth that are between the ages of 18 to 24. It is a two-year program. We see high turnover. Sometimes when you can't choose where you want to live, you don't necessarily treat the neighborhood very well. This is considered a colony neighborhood. There is a colony house right behind this property that is currently abandoned. Another way for folks that are between the ages of 18 to 24 to find some place to hang out. We've witnessed things like trespassing on our property, on other people's property, from those that have been tenants within the property, jumping fences, etc., things of that nature. In general, I oppose having additional units being used for the same purpose that they're being used for now.
Thank you. Welcome. Next speaker.
Hi, my name is Nathan Claude, and I also live on Olmeda, and I wanted to speak on the rezoning of that property, along with Claire's concerns of the law enforcement presence that seems to have to be there often to mitigate stuff taking place there. Traffic is a real problem on Olmeda. It's a fairly small road, but it accesses a lot of neighborhoods, so it already sees a high volume of traffic. So increasing the zoning for that property is going to expound that problem. And there's not much parking on the street. There's only about four spots that you can use on the street. And already, quite often, I see the county vehicles. I imagine it's the caseworkers are having to park on the other side of the street, which is posted no parking already, but they're doing it anyway. So I just don't see how it could be, with the more volume of vehicles, we could have safe traffic on the road, and that's basically my opposition. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome. Next speaker.
Hi there. Thanks for letting me speak. My name is Ariel Feely. I am also a resident across the street from the proposed, I know it's not on tonight, but the zoning change, and I'm in opposition of it as well. As my neighbor just said, the parking, there is not adequate parking. The street is very, very narrow with a lot of high traffic going down to the schools, children walking. I have children that walk home from school, so that's a concern for their safety just in terms of traffic. I also see the county vehicles and other vehicles parked where there's no parking because it's so narrow. You can't go, both cars can't pass each other, and there aren't sidewalks the whole length on both sides of the street. Also, I'm concerned for safety, as my other neighbor mentioned. I've lived in Atascadero on another street and have never witnessed what I have just in the past month. One Sunday afternoon, this might appear anecdotal, but I don't have the police record, but there were actually several police cars with guns drawn on the unit across the street. We've never experienced that before, and everything was fine. Excuse me, but I don't want that in my neighborhood. So I understand that we need a place for people to grow and flourish. High density would bring an increase of that behavior and or of that police activity. So it makes me a little leery for my children and my neighbors' children and families. I also found, and this is just anecdotal again, but a stolen purse right near the property, and I called the owner of the purse and agreed, I don't know, but these are just things I've never seen when I lived a little bit further away, and I'm right across the street. So I am in opposition of increased units there. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Welcome. Next speaker.
Well, I'm going to shuffle at the big run. I'm not doing a non-run, but I can shuffle my feet. I'm Barbie Boots, and John and I are going to be headed to Long Beach this weekend. And okay, good, thank you. to attend the California Parks and Recreation Society Conference, and I just have to say thank you for allowing me to represent Atascadero and all the people that do all the things that I did, that you said I did, to get to go to the conference. So when I get back, read my column, and then I'll come here and I'll tell you all about it and bring the award. Thank you. Thank
Very
you.
Very good.
You know how much I appreciate you.
Thank you. And I'm going to ask our city manager to do the two-sentence version of just this prestigious award the city was able to nominate Ms. Boots for and win. And then we're going to give...
So we nominated Ms. Boots for Community Champion. This recognizes people in the community, and actually this is a statewide recognition. So Barbie is one of a very few select people in the state that is being recognized for championing a community for all of their work that they do regarding recreation, parks, children, and community. As you all know, Barbie Boots has been a big part of what makes this community so special. Working with all sorts of groups. She's here tonight for the Printery Foundation, Assistance League, Parks and Rec Commission. I can't even name them all, but it's people like her that make Atascadero special, and we think it's perfectly appropriate that the other people in the state recognize all she does too. So thank you, Barbie.
to remind everybody what a wonderful community this is, because I didn't do anything alone. There were hundreds of people. You know, I mean, I've worked with all of you. I've worked with all of you on something. Even if we weren't side by side, you might have been part of the event. So I'm going to go there and represent the champions of this community, not just me.
Is there anyone else wishing to speak at the community forum? Seeing no one approach, we'll close the community forum portion, move on to our first public hearing, which is item B1, which is the 2018 Community Development Block Grant funding recommendations, and I believe our city engineer is taking the lead on that.
Thank you, Mayor O'Malley. I'm going to try to get through this quick tonight because I am on the tail end of a cold and I'm subject to having a coughing fit here and there. So, back in December, the City Council made recommendations on the draft funding allocations for the CDBG. 2018 CDBG funding is estimated at $141,115. We have not gotten the final amounts from the county yet, so this is the amount we're going with right now. As you may recall, Morro Bay and the county and the city of Atascadero had an agreement a couple of years ago in 2016 where we had unspent fund balance from projects. We also had a project at the Lake Park for that second phase of the accessibility with the sidewalk that, through the lawn area, and there was irrigation and some other improvements that were going to be part of phase two. It happened right at the same time as the water conservation measures that were handed down by the governor, so we decided to forgo that project because it just kind of mulch those areas and it seems to be working just fine. So that was also some of the money that was a part of this $236,000 loan that we provided to Morro Bay. So we're also getting $66,797 approximately from Morro Bay as their second payment of repayment for that. One of the things we had talked about back in December was with this money that the city loaned to Morro Bay, these were from earlier, like 2011 through 2015, and the county, we've decided to go in a cooperative agreement with them where they would do a lot of the solicitations, help the public workshops, a lot of the admin piece of doing these CDBG grants, and they have a 13% admin cost that they take from each city's allocation. The money that was loaned to Morro Bay was not subject to that admin fee, and the money that we're getting from Morro Bay in their current and future allocations is subject to that. So tonight, the recommendation does have approximately $8,700 of the $67,000 that will go to the county admin costs. We've been working and meeting with the county staff. We actually met with them yesterday, and they're working on a resolution and a solution to this issue. You know, our take out long has been, you know, that we want a dollar for dollar back for the public facilities piece. So if there's admin cost on top of that, we feel like, you know, that should be between Morro Bay and the county to work out. So we are working with them. We invited the county staff to the meeting tonight, and they had other obligations or could not make it. So we'll keep you posted on that as we move ahead. So there's still at least two more repayments from Morro Bay, probably two and a half, two and a partial.
Also, part of the allocation recommendations is some underfunded balance. This is always good news on our projects that we completed. So the El Camino, South El Camino infill project, this is a sidewalk that was built in front of the state hospital 2 years ago. There's still a little over $1,600 left in that fund balance that we're proposing to reallocate to the 2018 project, and also a little over $74,000 from the Atascadero Mall infill project. This is the new crosswalk that was built on the other side of the 101 at the end of the mall there outside the tunnel, and some of the sidewalk that went on the north side of Atascadero Mall. And the 2018 project is actually we've identified at the northwest corner of El Camino and Traffic Way. It's the some of that sidewalk, a kitty corner from the Carlton. I can actually got some pictures on here I can show. This is a corner there. There's a used car lot. There's a car repair business there. But you can see kind of in that upper photo, you know, the sidewalk, how it slopes down. It's almost a driveway approach. So we're looking at trying to make all that ADA compliant and with all the slopes and everything. We have met at least once, I think maybe even twice, with the owner there to talk about it, and we'll continue those discussions as we get into design. This project is the Atascadero Mall project. There was a rather large tree right in the middle of the site, well, what should be the sidewalk, that was removed. It's an elm tree, not a native oak or sycamore or anything like that. So it was, we got that out of there and made a nice complete path. We also removed and fixed some non-compliant sidewalk. So it's working very well right now, and it seems like everybody seems to be happy with that. In fact, so much so that they want the other side of the mall now to be fixed. This is some of the draft recommendations in that first column that the City Council made back in December. And you know, those numbers have not changed. As I mentioned, we have not gotten the updated numbers. But part of the recommendation would be that if that number changes, which it will, it's not going to be exactly that amount, but that there's a proportional distribution of increase or decrease to those amounts, to be adjusted. And on the bottom there, the public facilities reallocation, those are the two amounts from the fund balance from the two completed projects. So with that, recommendation is council review and approve these funding recommendations, which also includes reallocating those two amounts from the South El Camino Real project and the Atascadero Mall sidewalk project to the 2018 Traffic Way El Camino accessibility project. And this project would probably occur later this year, maybe in the fall, if we can advance some funds to it. And otherwise, at latest, it'll be next spring. So with that, I can take any questions you have.
Thank you, and we will try to limit that to council questions at this time. Then we'll go to the public, and we'll come back for some comments and direction. Questions? Go ahead, Councilman Moreno.
Director, I know you said this, and I'm trying to recall that $74,000 from the Atascadero Mall sidewalk infill reallocation, is that, were we under budget, or there's something we didn't do over there?
No, we were under budget on that one.
That's pretty significant. Good job.
It's pretty significant considering, I think, the total allocation to that was around, I think, $250,000 somewhere.
Yeah. No, that's excellent. And then my other question, so you said we've all talked about this publicly before, the county costs. We've already paid to the county for a previous Morro Bay payment, so is that being wrapped into that same conversation?
That is absolutely being wrapped in the same conversation.
Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Burbeau.
Yes, thank you. On this $74,000, good job on that, but it's being reallocated to the project, which is at the top of the slide. And so the cost of the project at the top of the slide, I can't remember what that specifically is, but we actually are going to need even more money to complete that project. Is that?
So we already have some money allocated from last year to it. So with these amounts, it'll be roughly $325,000
okay.
that can be spent on it. This will be a more expensive undertaking just because of the narrowness of the right-of-way and tightness and keeping traffic open and everything else.
So I understand. But that 74 is going on top of the 91 on the top of the slide.
Correct.
Gotcha. Okay, thank you.
Other council questions? Seeing none, I did want to confirm that if you think there could be a possibility of reducing some categories, and if so, in no case would, other than administrative costs, would anything go below 8,000, as I think that's a requirement that each project has to have at least 8,000 to make it cost effective for processing.
That is correct. The county requires an $8,000 minimum.
Okay, thank you. Seeing no other council questions, I'll open it up to the public for any questions or comment from the public on these items. Seeing no one approach, we'll close the public comment portion, bring it back to the council, and I'll take the lead. I know I speak for all the council with concern about I've often commented lately about the county looking more like the state of California, changing the rules after the fact. We've really, I think the cities work very well together. There was an issue where we had some extra train-related funds that we didn't need at the moment. We loaned those to Paso. They're paying us back. We have a nice give and take as sister cities. And here again, we essentially allowed Morro Bay to go ahead with the project as we often do at SLOCOG, and they were able to get a project done expecting that the money would be paid back, and Morro Bay is happy to pay that back. But then for the county to intervene, so to speak, mid-process and say, oh, by the way, we're not going to tack on administrative, and this could total $30,000 altogether with all these projects. That's $30,000 that our community won't get for very important projects. These are like Americans with Disability Act improvements. These are things like loaves and fishes, El Camino Homeless. It's very sad to see, as I was saying on KPRL bringing this up, you know, I, for $30, I'll process the paperwork for that. I don't think you need to do $30,000 of overhead on a project like this. So I know the city manager has conveyed the concern of the council, and we hope that they reconsider that. Open up to any other comments from the council, and also do we need a motion on this item as well for you? Yes, Rochelle.
First of all, I do want to say that I'm very hopeful that this can be resolved with the county. I had a good conversation with the county administrator, and he is very sympathetic to our issue, so we hope to have this resolved. Administratively, if we get the 8,684 resolved, I can, from a city manager perspective, move it up to the handicap the traffic way project, which would be our first choice, is to move it up to that project.
Yes.
So that we ensure we have enough. But if you could include that in our motion, that any Morro Bay admin that is returned to the city is also moved up there.
Very good. And I appreciate you. I think before we even heard about this problem, the city manager already advocated, rightly guessing what our position would be. And I do acknowledge that the new county administrative officer has been much more open to talking with the city than in the past. So we appreciate the county administrative officer and our city manager working on that, and we hope that we will have some of those funds freed up for real work. Thank you. Any other council comments or questions, or we're ready to make a motion?
Happy to make a motion. I will move that we approve the funding recommendations for the 2018 CDBG program and that we add into that, that should those fees, the $8,600 and change, that Rochelle can allocate that to the traffic light project.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Councilwoman Moreno, seconded by Councilmember Barbeau. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Barbeau?
Yes.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Mayor Probe. Sorry. Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
Motion passes 4-0.
Thank you. You're just silly tonight. Okay. Item B2, public hearings, request for authorization to process a general plan amendment for 7900 and 7890 Portola Road. And I assume, I see Mr. Dunsmore will be handling this, and you'll give a little background that this isn't actually a general plan amendment before us. This is to give some feedback to this. You might explain a little bit why we do this extra step and how that may help someone avoid costs, and you know, I assume that'll be part of your presentation. I'll turn it over to you.
Absolutely, yes, and thank you, and good evening, Mayor and Council. It is only four times a year that the state of California allows us to amend our general plan, so it's kind of a big deal. It's a piece of our whole general plan, so anytime we look at that, it's a big consideration, and so our zoning ordinance, our regulations, really lay out a process by doing that. It sets specific times a year, the state limits a certain number of times a year, and it's a substantial amount of cost and time for staff as well. So therefore, we have set up this process that really kind of says, hey, is this something we should proceed with? Is this something we should look at later on down the line? Is this something we should group with more of a city comprehensive look? And so that's why we've established this process for an authorization to proceed. So tonight we won't be looking at really the nuts and the bolts and all the ins and outs of whether this is a great idea or not. It's more along the lines of, hey, does this have merit as something that we want to entertain evaluating right now? And then if so, the applicant would then pay the full application fee. Staff would do a full analysis, including an environmental analysis, and we'd come back to you with a full discussion and whole situation. The latter is the council could decide we're not ready to authorize to proceed with this, and then you know we would perhaps kick this down the road to a later date, or the applicant would look at other opportunities. Anyway, that being said, I'm going to have actually Callie Taylor, our senior planner, give you some of the details on this specific site, which is really a request to rezone a commercial property back to residential. It's way out on the periphery of our commercial zone out there on Portola Road, just at the edge of Morrill Road there across from Lake Park. I'm going to let her give some details on it. Thank you.
Good evening. So tonight we are looking at two properties on Portola Road. Here we see a map of the property, and the two sites are 7900 and 7890 Portola Road. So these are the two that are adjacent to the restaurant that's on the corner across from the lake park. Each property is a little over half an acre. They total 1.26 acres. And as Phil mentioned, it is on the very edge of our commercial zone. So if we're thinking about our commercial artery along Morrow Road, this would be the last commercial property as you head out towards Highway 41 and Morrow Bay. Right now, these properties are zoned commercial retail, and they have a general plan designation of general commercial. So the applicant is proposing to change that general plan and zoning designation. The applicant has requested rezoning of two of the parcels. The proposal is being requested in order to eliminate the non-conforming status. So right now we have one of these properties developed with a single-family residence that makes it non-conforming in a residential zone, in a commercial zone. So in commercial properties, residential uses are allowed on the second and third floors, but first floor is limited to just commercial. So it has to be one of the allowed uses. The council policy does require this council review before staff does any work on the general plan amendment. So before the applicant pays the fees and we have invested substantial staff time into this project, we like to check in with the council first and see if this is something that you're interested in dedicating that time and resource to. Here we see an aerial photo of the corner that we're looking at. So the ones that are in yellow are currently developed with residential uses, with the exception of the far lot on Portola, which is currently vacant. But these are the ones that could be considered for a potential rezone. The applicant is only owns and has applied for a rezoning on the two most southern parcels, but the three on the north side of Portola Road have the same situation. They have existing residential uses in a commercial retail zoning. On the corner property, 9000 Mora Road, that's Marina's Cocina Restaurant, and then just to the north is the Creekside Center Commercial Development. Now, when we see redevelopment in areas like this, what we often look for is larger areas of land that can be grouped together, possibly under common ownership at one point, in order for that redevelopment to happen. That's what we saw at the Creekside Center. That was a larger parcel or a couple parcels that were able to be combined for internal access and development. That was about 10 or 15 years ago. The parcels that we're looking at today are have the existing non-conforming status, and then we have our vacant lot. This is a photo of the existing house that's on the property, and this is a photo of the vacant parcel. So there is substantial debris on the lot. It has been an issue of code enforcement in the past. As we're looking at this, we tried to take a look at some of the short-term and long-term benefits and effects of doing this type of rezone. So the parcels that we're looking at have been zoned commercial retail since the city's incorporation in 1980. We're not sure what they were under county zoning before that. At one time, they may have been a residential property, but for at least the last 38 years, they've been in a commercial zoning and have been considered non-conforming for that time. So in the short term, the benefits that we could be looking at would be to remove the non-conforming status of the existing residents. It would allow development of the vacant lot, and this has the potential to clean up these sites. Since they're not in the best condition right now, rezoning could help improve the appearance of those parcels. In the long term, something for the council to think about is that it limits future commercial development at the corner. So the restaurant parcel is very small. It's only 90 feet in depth, and it's just under half an acre. Redevelopment of this parcel by itself could be difficult at that corner. We'd have to look at sidewalk and parking being reconfigured to come out of the right-of-way. Currently, that parking lot is located mostly in public right-of-way. So rezoning of these parcels could limit the overall development in that area down the line. If the City Council would like to move forward with the general plan processing, the first step would be to do a neighborhood meeting. This is held by the applicant. The next thing would be a study session. This is usually a joint City Council and Planning Commission study session to look at all the issues. In this case, we don't have a large development project on the table, so these could be a little bit smaller meetings than you might see with like a planned development or a major area rezone. The Atascadero General Plan identifies particular times of the year that we're allowed to look at general plan amendments. So those are designated for March and September. This could be something that we could have before you by September if you decided to move forward with it. There is fiscal impact that the city has studied from residential development. It's the council's policy that all residential developments that come before the council that receive discretionary review are subject to annexation to the community facilities district. And this has been the council policy in the past that could be applied to this project as well. Staff impact is something to think about when we're doing a general plan amendment. It does require city planning and public works staff to work on this sort of amendment. Currently, there are a number of priority projects in process that could be affected if we put another general plan amendment on the table to get done by September. Staff is recommending at this time that this general plan amendment request be tabled until the city considers a citywide general plan land use map update. So our current general plan has a build out of 2025. We expect in the next few years we're probably going to be looking at a citywide general plan update. And this could be a parcel that we look at as part of that overall land use map update. There are some alternatives if the council would like to move forward. The council may authorize staff to process the proposed general plan amendment application with a neighborhood meeting and study session. The council may direct staff to further analyze the project and report back to the council before taking action on regarding processing. Or the council may direct staff to process the proposed general plan amendment and add additional parcels. So we talked about those three commercial zoned parcels across Portola Road that are currently developed with residential uses. These could be added to the general plan amendment if you desired. So tonight staff is making a recommendation to council to direct staff to table the request until we do a citywide general plan land use map update. And the applicant is here as well if you have any questions.
Thank you. And we have a fairly short agenda, so we will have time to make sure we thoroughly review this. I would like to see a show of hands, anyone that's here in the audience that wants to speak on this issue. They're here for this issue. If I could just see your hand so I get a... We have two folks to speak on this, and so it gives me an idea to judge public input. We'll go ahead and go to council questions first, and then we'll go to the public, then we'll come back and have some, I'm sure, quite a bit of deliberation before we get to a decision. So first we have Councilmember Sturdivant, followed by Councilmember Burbeau.
Yes, question on, you know, we're looking at the El Camino corridor and a development study on that. Is there any kind of a development study for the Highway 41 corridor and ideas of, is there anything that we've done or are going to do looking at commercial land and what we'd like to do with it?
It hasn't been on our forecast, no. We haven't got a study of the land use. I mean, some of the other things that are happening, though, are a lot of transportation-related projects that are moving forward, some being led by Caltrans, and those are the things that are looking at the pedestrian and multimodal connections from Portola all the way to Highway 101. So there will be, in coming years, some improvements to that curb gutter and additional road width along that area. So that, in the future, could, you know, cause us to refocus our land use attention on the Highway 41 corridor, but at this time we don't have a land use study underway.
Thank you.
I'd like to follow up that with a little more, and maybe our city engineer could speak to that, because it's through the San Luis Council of Governments. We did have a pretty significant grant to study Highway 41, and we already have funded, I think within a couple of years, some major improvements, including filling in a lot of those gullies along the road to get to full width. It's going to have a significant impact on commercial development, and in the public hearings that we had related to that, there was a lot of interest by business property owners along there, seeing a lot more potential, because it'd be fairly expensive to develop those commercial parcels along Highway 41. However, if Caltrans is able to do a significant amount of that work, that certainly will be incentive. Could you add a little bit to that so we just thoroughly answer that one question for Councilman Sturdivant?
Sure. Phil, could you maybe go back to that map? One of the things Caltrans is currently working on, it's about $8.5 million improvement to the corridor. They're going to be really focusing on pedestrian connectivity, fixing ADA ramps, things like this. We're also partnering with Caltrans to obtain buffered bike lanes along both sides of the corridor. The corridor, fully built out, is kind of stops right at Portola, so it's kind of Portola towards town. Right now, the preliminary plans I've seen of Caltrans have a lot of the, what I would call the south side of 41, or northbound if 41 is a north-south route, being built out completely. So they're going to be taking care of a lot of that. Some of the sections that will not be as built out will be leaving town, so on the way out of town. But nonetheless, some of those will be fully built out as well. These two properties are somewhat off the corridor. There's no work planned on the frontage of Portola, but they will be fixing finally, as one of the mayor's, I guess, maybe pet peeves on that intersection is the crosswalks, so they will be addressing a lot of those issues right at this intersection, but it will stop short at these two properties. Is that anything else?
I'll follow up with some questions when it's my turn, but thank you. You had no further questions, Councilmember Sturdivant, so Councilmember Burbeau?
Yes, thank you. And by the way, thank you to the owner I drove by today. It looks like they did clean up the junk on the second property there. Anyway, question regarding the other thing we heard about tonight, the Olmeda property, and that is, is that going to be coming back to us in the same time frame? And is there any savings from a staff time standpoint or in terms of holding a joint meeting, that sort of thing, if both requests were to be acted on and heard at the same time? I realize the research and the staff study would all be additional and be separate for each project, but is there any savings in staff time if we were to consider two or more things, you know, during the same set of meetings, et cetera?
Not really, because they both have very different circumstances. They're both going to require separate environmental analysis. They're both going to require really separate staff report analysis, and they have different conditions. Even though they could be heard on the same night, there's not really a lot of staff time savings.
So the only thing you'd save is not having a second meeting, I guess, would be the thing. I think the mayor was alluding to, but has there been any actual interest on the part of commercial developers in these types of properties?
No. No, it's an interesting location because it's really at the periphery of the commercial zone. And it's not to say it couldn't in the future, so we really have to look at long-term, 20 years from now, you know, as that Mexican restaurant redevelops and someone wanted to acquire a couple of properties, it could be a really interesting site. But as of right now and as of recently, there hasn't been that interest. Just, you know, to the north of here on the newer commercial development, that's sort of an example of what could happen here, where you've got that little commercial complex. But currently there's nothing on the table, and it is developed with primarily residential properties as you head out there to the northwest.
And the commercial park that you just referred to it as, this is a commercial retail zone, but that commercial park is allowed, or did it require an exception to go into that commercial retail zoning?
It didn't really require an exception. Those are all allowed land uses. Those are land uses that are allowed in the retail zone. You've got a yoga studio there, okay. You've got some offices there, and a couple of semi-retail uses in there.
Got it. Okay, and as far as you know, there is an existing non-conforming house on one of the two properties. Is there any other existing process within the city to allow for a residence to be built on commercial retail property if there's certain findings made, et cetera? Or is a general plan amendment the only way to accomplish what they're seeking?
For what the applicant wants, a general plan amendment would be the only way to get there, to do a ground floor single family residential site on that site closest to the creek. The other site already has a residence. That residence could actually be rebuilt. Given the way our zoning's written, it could actually, you know, you do a small addition to it. So it's really grandfathered in. What is allowed there is multifamily residential above the ground floor. So even let's say he wanted to do a small office in the front of the site and wanted to do some parking in the rear and build some residential above that parking, that kind of a thing is supported by our general plan, is allowed with a use permit through our zoning. And you can do a much higher density than if it was zoned single family. You can actually do up to 16 units an acre. This site being about half acre, you could probably get away with almost 7 upstairs units there if you could fit the parking and get the site access to be safe onto Portola Road. So that's an example. It could be developed quite intensely, which, to be quite honest with you, that kind of development would seem rather inconsistent with that particular site. But anyway, that's what's allowed today, given that kind of zoning. So it actually has realistically a much higher value in that zoning than it would as a single family.
And last question, Ms. Taylor indicated in the staff report that these properties have been zoned as commercial retail since the least, or since roughly the city's incorporation and adoption of its own general plan. Do you know how long the owner has owned this property?
The current owner just purchased these properties with the intent to clean up that property and really invest in putting a single family home on that particular vacant site.
Okay, but it is safe to assume they were aware or should have been aware of the zoning then?
Absolutely. In fact, he came in during his negotiation and discussion of purchasing those properties to see what the support and what staff's feelings were on that particular property. And I think at that time our conversation was, you know, here's this process. We're not going to tell you, you know, either way whether you're going to have success rezoning it. But and that's where we led him towards the process that we're in today.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. No other council questions? I have a few. If you go back to what I'd call the picture, the bird's eye view, that's the one. And of course, I'm being so old, very familiar with this. We used to call this George's, like George's Market was Lakeside Grocery right on the corner. And of course, I think it was George Williams, the owner, lived in that house there. It basically predates city being incorporated. But it was a great hangout for the neighborhood anyway. And I think the things that come to my mind is, of course, this is the last commercial closest to our Lake Park Zoo, which we are investing a lot in to make it a mega event center. It's nice having the restaurant there if it had future potential. However, its parking is in the right-of-way, and it's very limited is what it can do, I take it. What is the requirements for parking for a restaurant that size right there on the corner on that existing configuration? If they, let's say Caltrans actually betters the rest of Highway 41, what happens to that restaurant parcel if they have to give up, which I can see those hash marks, all the parking along Highway 41 looks like it's within the right-of-way. And what is the plan for Highway 41 right there, as well as what would be the parking requirements for that restaurant? Would it end up reducing their usage as a restaurant by losing those parking spaces, like a total use of that property? What can you tell me with what you know at this point?
I don't know that there's any further plans to refine Highway 41, Morrow Road, west of Portola. I think it's pretty close, although it's got parking there right away, which is, I think most of it's been taken out now by that new Class 1 path. There's not plans to do significant changes to that. But back to the number of parking spaces, the site now is pretty close to adequate parking. Parking calculations for restaurants aren't based on the square footage of the restaurant. They're based on the number of tables. It's really an interesting calculation. It's really based on the number of patrons that can occupy that particular restaurant. So parking for that particular restaurant right now hasn't been an issue. If it was to redevelop into a much more intense restaurant with a lot of outdoor tables and a lot of indoor tables, we could be reaching that maximum, and that could be a constraint.
Well, that is another question, because that restaurant did expand into outdoor seating that didn't used to exist, and so those tables would be added to the count then if they're outside tables as well to parking requirements.
Yes.
Now, currently, this parcel, it's not like one owner owns all three parcels. One owner owns the restaurant parcel, and then another owner owns the two commercial, where it's got a non-conforming residential. Did the restaurant property owner used to own these two lots, or have it been separate ownership for some time?
As far as I know, it has been separate ownership in recent years.
And one concern I'd have for residential right along the creek, it seems like we all chipped in some of our own money to help with a permit for rescuing a residents right along a floodplain in another part of town. If this were, I noticed where that Creekside Center commercial development was and that corner building that's, I think, not an occupied former lawyer office. When those were redeveloped, they raised the buildings, I think, like 5 feet off the ground. They actually raised the ground and then built commercial on top. And is there any issue or from the city's perspective of any residential building that close to the creek? Because granted, we haven't seen it in a long time, but I remember when that creek was going over that bridge, and the reason that house that is non-conforming that is there, if you notice, the previous owner built a block wall about 3 foot high around it to try to keep the water out, because for years it was always a question of being flooded. So I think one issue on commercial, it's kind of, there's a sense that if you build commercial and it gets flooded, well, maybe folks aren't sleeping there at night or something. If you've got residential development, would there be requirements to get above that floodplain, or are there any, is it pretty much the buyer beware, if you construct, you're just going to pay more insurance? And sometimes, I know along the Salinas River, folks had to do special construction, have electrical outlets higher in the house and such things. What all is involved that you know of in terms of developing this, any different between commercial and residential, given its low level next to a creek?
Yes, I think there is a little bit of distinction between commercial and residential. This site, especially the westerly site, is absolutely within a flood zone. I'm not sure of the level of flood zone, but it is in a flood zone. We did check that. In fact, the 100-year flood zone goes all the way out, almost all the way out to Morrow Road. So all of these properties are within that. The general rule is that properties need to get built to be at least 1 foot above that base flood elevation, and typically a flood analysis would need to be done on those sites as well. The distinction between commercial and residential typically has to be built with that ground floor above that. With commercial, you sometimes have the option of doing flood proofing and different construction techniques and having your parking bays and other things like that built within that flood zone. So there's a little bit of differentiation there as well, and maybe Nick, our public works director, might want to chime in on some of those issues as well, because there's other implications to building a flood zone in terms of offsetting floodwaters and things like that. The other question you had was about creek setbacks. There is ample room on these sites to develop and be outside of any creek setback, but not outside of that flood zone. You're going to have to deal with that, so you're going to have to either modify this site, build construction in a certain way, or deal with those types of issues. So it is a concern.
You know, I think part of this discussion tonight is so that any future development is not misled. I think it is an issue that folks have to consider, but I think, as I understand it, commercial, you might have the ability to build commercial on the first floor with some mitigation, and then residential on a higher level, and you might be better off with insurance and with, you know, building requirements. Whereas I think if you were going to try to build residential on that parcel that's closest to the creek, that's what I was wondering, is if they would be required to basically build it up across the street where that other Creekside Center is. I think they raised it like, I know on the corner, like 4 or 5 feet up. This is actually 4 or 5 feet lower than where it was to start. So we're almost looking about 10 feet increase in height just to kind of get to ground zero, so to speak. And I don't know if you can speak to that. It's not something we can address entirely tonight, but is that thinking correct, that you might have more requirements for site improvement for residential than you would commercial, is kind of my general question. And is that a city engineer topic?
That's kind of, I guess I'm going to sound like the city attorney and say it depends. So it kind of depends, as Director Dunsmore mentioned, with commercial construction, they do allow you to build in flood zones, even residential you can, but you need to always have that 1 foot above the 100-year flood elevation. Commercial, there's certain construction techniques and components you can do, such as it's usually with the foundation and allowing the water to go through the building. So if you can raise it up, if there's an annular space underneath, that it can flow through. Mayor, you mentioned that, you know, you've seen water going over that bridge before. There, you know, that bridge is, we've done, Public Works has done some analysis on that in the past. They've seen where, you know, debris will get caught underneath there and plug it up, you know, which obviously even makes that flood elevation jump up higher immediately upstream of that bridge. So there are some risks with this property, there's no doubt, but you know, a lot of it can be compensated with certain construction techniques and other things. So I wouldn't necessarily say, you know, residential or commercial would meet, you know, from a construction standpoint in the flood zone, would, you know, one would be more desirable over the other. Obviously, residential is always more scrutinized in a flood zone. That's just because that's where people live and where their belongings are and other things. So it's, you know, I guess take that for what it's worth. And but I guess, you know, in recap, commercial usually is a little more acceptable in a flood zone than residential.
Well, whenever somebody asks me, well, couldn't the city just kind of let something happen? And I say, you know, the city probably would be fine to do that if you can talk your insurance company into okaying it. And because my experience is insurance companies have more scrutiny than even the state of California. But I think we'll just see. I think one thing that would be good to have for an outline is what policy decisions do we have to consider as a council looking at something like this? Because I'm seeing on one hand, we've kind of said as a policy, we're going to avoid, if we can, converting commercial to residential. We'd really need to, okay, have some reasons to change that policy. We've had a policy of not doing spot zoning, like if we're jumping kind of a hodgepodge around the community, we kind of like to have a you know, contiguous thinking through of compatibility. Now, on the one hand, this is at the extreme end of commercial, so maybe, but it's also a difference in terms of a higher density. These would be already smaller parcels than the adjoining moving west, to much larger parcels. So, you know, that's kind of another policy issue. Are there others that we would need to consider that, okay, if we're going to do something different with this, are we kind of changing our mind on any other policy areas that you can think of? Or is that it? So commercial to residential, spot zoning, any other, going from maybe a change in density significant to adjoining parcels, or other principles we need to consider for a project like this?
The biggest question here is setting a precedent to let go of commercial property. We've talked a lot about this recently. That's why we're doing an El Camino Real study, to look at that. Our general plan even looked at that a lot in 2002. We're a bedroom community. We're really struggling to get the services and the business and the jobs balance back in here. So every time we do a commercial rezoning, I think it needs to be carefully examined, and we need to look at all of those aspects. So that is really the biggest question here. What makes this different than any other commercial property? Is this less suitable to develop as commercial? Perhaps. Is there commercial vacancies along Morrow Road, perhaps. Could this develop as a commercial property in the future? Yes, it probably could, given its location to the lake park and some of those things. It's been commercial since 1980, and it hasn't developed that way, probably because it's been in separate ownerships, and it hasn't really been available. That might be one of the reasons as well. Spot zoning. This would be contiguous zoning with properties to the west, but these properties would be non-conforming like many other properties on Portola Road. These properties would be slightly smaller than the subdivisions that are currently allowed in the west side in that particular single-family zoning district. So if we were to zone the single-family, it would be that category that's just to the west of here. So it would put those into that category.
There is sewer along Portola there anyway,
yes.
I believe. So
yes.
That apparently is not a problem.
So it is sort of a difficult consideration. So those are the factors, I think, as staff sees it today.
Okay, thank you. Other council questions before we go to the public? Well, I will go ahead and open it up to the public, and we'll take our time. I'm not going to be too strict on, in fact, I'm even going ahead, since there's so few folks here, if you need a little more than 3 minutes, I'm going to be okay with that tonight. I'd invite the applicant up first and give you some leeway. You can raise a response to any of our questions or tell us what your vision is. I'm going to give you some leeway. If you go past 10 minutes or so, I might, say, are you about done? But I'll give you some leeway.
I don't think that'll be a problem. So thanks for having me. My name is Reggie Berard, local builder since I've been here, local builder, local plumber for 78, 80 when I moved here. So, yeah, when I was considering purchasing this parcel, I talked to Phil, and he told me about the potential concern that it might pose on that. But as I look at this is like perhaps casting visions. I really appreciate casting visions for our town because I think it's very important. On the flip side, if I was to just express my thoughts, when I got that place, that house on the corner is a good house, and there's nothing wrong with it. And I'm not trying to change anything that's already 80% developed in that section. Out of the five parcels, four are developed. The one I just purchased, we cleaned up that whole property. And the house that is closest to the restaurant is a really good house, and there's nothing wrong with it. And I see the vision that perhaps could take place. But then, could that happen? I guess it could. Is it a long shot? It's a long shot, because who would take, if I get to do what I would like to do and just keep it as residential? That would probably take just to get the dirt together for a developer. That's a lot of investment prior to even putting sticks on the ground. And the same applies to the three parcels across the street. And then, to me, if you thought about the accessibility to those parcels, if the front parcels are not part of the big picture, then the accessibility becomes a big question, because on Portola, that bridge will limit the width of the road. Also, could you imagine building 7 units on that one lot back there with parking places? And that Portola Road, as you know, it's a four-way. It's a stoplight. It also is an access for 3F Meadows and for Long Valley. And since I've been there, there's a lot of traffic that comes down that road. Now, somehow that traffic would have to, if I'm going to remodel that house in the front, then what am I going to do with the next house? Am I going to put a commercial project on there that has to have parking for so many people with so many units that have to access onto Portola? That is the here and nows. And so in 38 years ago, that was annexed into the city for commercial retail. Those houses are, I'm going to say, 50 or 60 years old. And I'm just trying to add to the 80% that's already developed and add another 20% to it. And as far as the 100-year floodplain, we've been in one before in the development of, and yes, you have to be above, and there is a, I've already talked to Twin Cities Engineering about that, Skip, and Skip has the paperwork on what it would take to conform to that 100-year standard. So we've went that far. I've actually even had it surveyed just to check, because I know we have to meet certain requirements. Maybe I've gone a little too far because I've actually cleaned the whole property and everything. And
cleaned it up.
Okay, so anyways, I really, you know, Phil and Kelly did a great job of explaining it. I don't know that, of course, as an investor, I would hope that it wouldn't be shelved for a long time, because to me, when I purchased it, I thought, heck, this is sort of a slam dunk when you look at it for the here and now. But then you got to dig into the particulars, which we're doing now, and I'm just hoping that maybe we can revisit, as they were saying, and come back and say, after, you know, of course, find some favor in the development of that parcel. And I think that's all I have to share. You know, I don't know. I guess that's all I have to say. Thanks for letting me be here.
And well, we'll have some more discussion, I'm sure. But before we have another speaker,
yeah.
I want to let folks know in the audience, we're really pretty easy on all of you. We are a little tougher on the guy that's the developer. Give him more time, let him go first, but we might have questions where we're not going to get in a debate with any of you. We might get in a debate with him, so that's just so you know. I'm going to share a little bit of what I, and I've got a question for you, I think, still. So don't go too yet. Don't leave the mic yet. We allow council to ask any questions for you. I could say kind of a council perspective would be, let's say you were a long-time owner of the property and the city changed the rules on you and you were coming to say, gee, you know, couldn't I do something the way it used to be or something? We'd probably be more sympathetic than you came as an investor, you knew what you're getting and you'd like to make a change. It might be worth doing, but if it wasn't worth doing, we'd be less sympathetic. And we'd also figure on the plus side, well, you're a big boy, you made a decision, and you also can take the risk. The things we were talking about is like concerns we'd have, we wouldn't want any member of the public to be aware of. You know, it's a challenging lot, but the plus is you're an investor, you've developed property, you know the risk, you know what you got to do. So that would make folks feel a little more comfortable, okay, you're not jumping into something that turns out to be the money pit, which, you know, I'm sure you've experienced that. So it sounds like with you're well aware of that where that existing house is, it's higher below it's still below the floodplain, but then that next parcel is even lower, and you've kind of figured out what it's going to take to bring that up to what you'd need to do if you were going to actually build on it. And you're comfortable with that.
Okay. Yeah, I went over that with Skip with Twin Cities Engineering. He gave me the setbacks of the creek and where the house would have to be placed and you know, the stem wall foundation that we'd have to do with the driveway going into it.
Okay, I think we do have some council questions for you first, and then we'll open it up to the general public. So first we have Councilwoman Moreno.
You mentioned you were glad that we were talking about vision, and then you kind of went back to, but in the here and now, and I didn't necessarily hear a vision from you. Is there something that you wanted to say on that?
No, just that I appreciated the vision of the city and the concerns that they always have for, let's look at the big picture. But as I looked at it, I saw the house, I saw something historically that has been there for 50 or 60 years, and that I wasn't trying to change the vision of the current status, but I was just adding to the, I was just completing what was already 80% developed. With that being said, is it a long shot to see, to carry this vision out with three property owners on one side and two property owners and potentially three property owners on the other side?
Bigger things have been carried out before.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then that's not a problem then, I guess.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Let's see. That. Any other council questions? Well, thank you. We'll see if any other member of the public would like to speak.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Welcome. Next speaker. I think, yeah, we're having trouble hearing. I think we need to keep that mic up close to, there we go.
Dave Dart's one of the property owners across the street.
I think we're still, let me go ahead and take a little time, and I think adjusting it up, there we go. I think that might,
hello.
Perfect.
Okay. I'm Dave Dart's one of the property owners across the street, and I learned a lot. Not sure what the benefit is for residential or commercial for my particular property.
If you could keep it, it's tough to get used to. You want to keep about 6 inches away from that mic.
I don't know what benefit is for my property to be commercial or residential at this point in time, so I'm kind of open either way. I looked into this some time ago of what the restrictions are on commercial, and from what I understand, there's nothing I can do to develop for commercial, so I'm kind of stuck. And I don't know what the restrictions are for developing it as residential. Maybe somebody can answer that.
Any other questions? And we'll try to take a shot at that.
Okay. Earlier today or tonight, you mentioned something about there's maybe funding or residential help for flooding improvements.
No, we're just saying it costs more to deal with flooding potential.
Okay, there isn't any grants or anything for that.
Mr. City, we'll go ahead and cover all of your questions, and we'll try to come back and deal with each one.
Well, that's really the two big points I have at this point in time. There's a possibility of everything could be developed into some sort of commercial, but it, like the previous gentleman said, it's pretty difficult to get three different parcel owners to sell all at the same time. So I guess I'm interested in what happens down the road, and I think you said you're not going to make a decision for 6 or 8 months?
Or longer.
So I guess just I have to keep informed with what you're going to do, because it looks like you might decide to do, you could do everything on both sides.
If we make any changes, we will have extensive public process. You will get tired of coming to share your thoughts, because we will ask for your thoughts so often.
Okay.
And currently, you kind of have the best of both worlds. I'll let staff deal with it. You have a non-conforming use, so you can have residential as long as you live there, and you could also have a commercial application potentially. I know somebody just up the street on Portola that happens to be a hairstylist. He would love to have a property like yours, because he could kind of basically, the city couldn't tell him he couldn't have his home business and expand it because it's commercial property, but he could also live there. So there's pros and cons to everything. And I think to answer your question, I'm going to direct you to, like this other gentleman did, go make an appointment with planning staff. They'll sit down with you and kind of tell you, here's what you might be able to do with your piece of property and what are you interested in. They could kind of talk about what's allowed in the way your property is, if you have any interest in other things. That'd be the best way to approach, I think.
Great. I'm here to be educated.
We often get an education here. Well, thank you. And we'll, if you have any other questions you have for us while you're here.
That's it for now.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. And be sure to grab a card from Mr. Dunsmore, the head of our community development department. If you have questions about your parcel or what's going on, sit down with him sometime. Any other member of the public wishing to comment or ask a question on this item, now is the time to come forward. Seeing no one run to the lectern, we'll go ahead and close public comment now, bring it back to council, and see what staff would like, or what council would like to do. Any questions, comments, and let's just have a little discussion, if any, and then I think I'll focus in to just give direction to staff where we want to go with this. So, who would like to speak?
I show up number two on there.
Well, I guess it just didn't get. Okay, yeah, sometimes we'll. There you go. Go ahead and take it.
I kind of have a question for staff because I see a whole bunch of conflicting thoughts about this. But in terms of this representing, you know, a larger commercial corner that together is close to 2 acres, I guess, not quite. In order to have some realistic commercial potential, though, if somebody were to want to develop this as a commercial corner, essentially they'd have to tear down the existing house on the, you know, middle property. And I don't know if that's, and same with the ones across the street, they would most likely, if they wanted to develop to some sort of commercial potential, they'd essentially have to tear down those existing structures, which would seem to me to be very costly in terms of what they'd be giving up. You know, you buy something that's a usable single-family house, which are in high demand nowadays, and you have to tear it down. Is that a fair assumption, that that would be the only way that the entire corner would be developable as a commercial project?
Well, let me debate with you for a moment, because staff would, of course, give you the practical answer. But as someone who's been involved with a lot of real estate and various things, you could look at one plus is anytime you already have square footage, if you do tear it down, you get credit for the square footage you have. And you would also look at how would you build around. I'm amazed what I've seen folks do in terms of building around an existing structure and elevating up to, okay, workforce housing for an expanded commercial corner, and now you got housing up above, which you can't do anywhere else hardly, but you could there. And if you looked at that as a complex supporting a different, let's say, more tourist-oriented activities at the Lake Park Zoo, where you can have events with thousands of people, if that restaurant were expanded and maybe some other services on that first floor that's currently a residence but reconfigured, and you have workforce housing, and you think of that as more of a L-shape development, you know, I think there's some folks down the road may well say, yeah, that is tourist commercial along a scenic state highway, the only commercial adjoining a Lake Park Zoo, Veterans Memorial, lots of potential. So, yeah, I think a different investor might look at it differently, how soon that might be. Good point. Now, okay, go ahead and staff, to answer his question from a practical planning standpoint.
And I don't know if there's a perfectly practical answer to that one, because I've seen some very creative land uses in a commercial zone put into a residence. We have several of those on El Camino and the old colony houses. So it could be the fact that someone comes in and says, hey, I'd like to open up an office in this house, and they'll do that in a commercial zone. That could happen today. But realistically, the best and highest use would be, yes, complete cleaning of the site and development of a key cohesive commercial project and parking and access and improvements. The best time for that to happen would have been when the Creekside Center developed, because now it sort of narrows that opportunity out, and now your access is solely from Portola Road for that north, the north three properties. Makes it kind of difficult. You don't have really the highway frontage. You don't have that commercial frontage. On the south side, with Marina's Cucina, the restaurant, and those three properties, probably more potential with that, to look at that as a cohesive development if someone was to get all three of those, because that is an older building, it's an older house. Even though it's a significant flood zone, maybe there's potential. The thing to look at is, even if all of that, even if the house wasn't demolished, but that remained in a common ownership, you could even save that house structure and use some of that area for some commercial development and kind of back and forth and do some different things with that property and expand that commercial use and not have conflict between the two properties. So there's some different things that could happen. It's not an all or nothing situation oftentimes.
Yeah, thank you. And we've had some discussions in the past about some requests to rezone commercial property to residential along El Camino. And we kind of put those on hold while we study the El Camino corridor. And even though, you know, it's much, they're far apart and it's a different story, it's part of a larger question about, you know, converting commercial property to residential zoning. When do we expect that would come back before us, you know, relative to that question on the El Camino corridor?
The close date on that RFP actually is this Friday, finally. So we're getting some consultants interested in assisting us with that effort. It's going to take us probably 6 to 8 months or more to really get that going and get that off the ground and come back with some analysis. So it's kind of a longer-term project.
Okay. I mean, and the reason I asked, Mr. Mayor, is I hate to see... we don't want to convert commercial property to residential and then its commercial potential is lost forever. On the other hand, with the entire Amazon effect, I think almost every city in America has a certain amount of surplus commercial retail property that will probably never be developed, at least not into retail, could possibly develop into commercial. But as a result, you know, we have these people who, in these odd little corners of the world kind of thing, are sort of orphaned, if you will, and while, you know, he as the new owner bought it, and as the mayor stated, you know, knew what he was getting into from a zoning perspective, on the other hand, we end up having properties that realistically could sit for, you know, 10, 20, 30 years perhaps, and be very low on the totem pole of interest for commercial developers, and essentially kind of not have any potential for anything because we won't allow residential in there, you know, let's say way on the back burner commercially. So I'm kind of troubled by it either way. And I guess as far as tonight's action is concerned, my greater concern in the short term is the impact on staff time to spend time on essentially one property, to kind of clean up a loose end, if you will, for one property, and the impact that has on what we, all the other things we want you to focus on that are hopefully of greater benefit to a larger number of property owners and citizens in our community. So I'm a little torn, but I'm at least for the time being, I'm inclined that you know, that we not take an action at this point in time. No, it's not. Well, not yet. I see where you guys
we
are.
Have questions by Councilmember Sturdivant.
Yeah, you had mentioned about in your recommendation was about tabling it, and then you mentioned about a citywide general plan land use map update. Are there other parcels, other areas that we already have set aside or we're talking about, or in other words, not just, you know, we're not just talking about this one. Are we talking about a period in time where, you know, 8 months down the road, a year down the road, 2 years down the road, 2.5 years, there's this parcel, there's other parcels that you want to do all in one amendment? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes and no. There's no official list right now running of properties we'd like to give attention to, but there are properties that have been looked at and I know that have been in discussion. And as we do this El Camino Real Corridor study, it can lead into that larger discussion and be the catalyst for that. our general plan is beginning to age a bit. We're beginning to reach that build out sort of territory as we get to the next 5 years. So with that, we're looking at properties at Del Rio, we're looking at properties on the south end of town. There's certainly good candidates out there. We don't have an official list. I think, you know, from an economic development standpoint, and other standpoints, we've been looking, you know, at that, but haven't created an official inventory.
My concern also is with staff time as well in looking at something like this, because, you know, I look at this and it's, you know, we've made decisions where we have not had an overall plan when we have, and this has happened not so much we, but we as a city, where we've had commercial property that we have changed to residential, and we didn't have an overall view of really where we were going or what we wanted to achieve. So I have a hard time with that, because, you know, I really want to make sure that we're making the right decision. And on the other hand, this is on the outskirts. You know, like, you know, if we're going to end a commercial zone, I mean, this has been about as far out as you're going to get. So, if we did approve this moving forward, what kind of time frame does that look like from staff's perspective and work on staff?
So it is a little bit of a work effort from staff. We do have to do a CEQA document. We have to do an initial study of environmental review. We do have to come back to several more hearings. We're going to have to go back to Planning Commission, study session, and then back to a council hearing. So several staff reports, several notifications, the environmental document. I couldn't give you an exact number of staff hours. The time that we would be able to get this back is, like our discussion mentioned, we have two times a year we do general plan amendments, so we'd be in the September timeframe to get this back, unless the council wanted to alter that time frame and suggest a different time if we saw this as a higher priority.
And what would have to be, what other jobs would have to go on the back burner if something like this came up?
Well, we've got several things going on right now, one of those being some amendments to the Del Rio specific plan that are very high priority to look at. We're working on that right now. As you know, we're working on the El Camino Real grant from Caltrans that looks at transportation and land use issues. We have several major commercial projects that we're dealing with. At your next hearing, you'll be seeing the La Plaza project. You'll be seeing some stuff from Colony Square soon. What else have we got going on, Callie, that we're doing? Remind me. A few things.
Corridor study, new staff.
Yeah, we're down a couple staff. We're just about to implement an entirely new permit tracking software that seems to be consuming our lives. We do have a lot of things going on. In addition to that, we're sort of at this peak of development activity given the current economic trend. People are developing housing, people are developing small commercial projects. There's a lot of activity in our department right now. It's a very interesting time.
All right, thank you.
I'm very hesitant to go against the policies that we have set when there isn't a clear benefit to the greater community. Also very concerned with staff time. I will say we all sat here, I don't know, 3-4 years ago as part of the successor agency when we were talking about the Creekside building and saying, what are the options with that and what could be done? And it seemed like it sat there, you know, well, it did. It sat there for a few years and it wasn't being used. And then with this activity coming in that the director is speaking about and has been coming in the last couple of years, you know, suddenly we've got a new owner, we've got a co-working space going in there. Who thought about that 3 years ago? That wasn't even on the radar. And other businesses that will be coming in. So I think while none of us can sit here today and say, oh, this is what would be perfect there, again, it's across from the Lake Park Zoo Veterans Memorial, that event center really for us, and we don't necessarily know what the potential is, and I don't want to lose that potential, especially when, again, we would be going against our current policy for not a value to the greater good and taking up staff time.
Thank you. I think I know what would be perfect there, but I go back to my good friend, best friend, Steve Martin, when he was first mayor in Paso. He said Paso could someday be a tourism center, and of course people laughed at him in the 80s. When I first came on council, I said, you know, we could be a tourism center. Yeah, I still got elected.
16 years ago, and every time, you know, I said, you know, if we just got another motel, what a difference that'd make. We're not going to get another motel when Holiday Inn Express came in, when the Marriott came in, when the Carlton was rebuilt. And now we've got a boutique hotel coming in downtown next to Galaxy Theater. And as they keep coming, we are, as we heard from WineSpeak, we had folks from all over the country coming in saying, this is a great community to do activities in. And where can you do large activities? Also, besides downtown, the whole Lake Park Zoo, Veterans Memorial, that is a great vision. This is the only zoned tourist commercial property we have in the city of Atascadero. And the state of California is going to spend $8 million to improve a state highway. This is the corner of Portola and Highway 41, a scenic highway. Portola is the largest road along that Highway 41 corridor. It is, what, a collector? What do we call that in the engineering terms? It is designed to handle more traffic than any of the other cross streets along Highway 41, a scenic state highway, next to our Lake Park Zoo Veterans Memorial that can hold events of 10,000, 20,000 people. So I would say, much like else, we did a corridor study along El Camino, and we did make some decisions. Yeah, some areas make sense to go residential. Let's look at key corners, because we're not going to get large major retail. We're going to have boutique interesting things to do where people spend more money, is what we hope. More of those boutique hotels. I think this is an area, scenic highway on one side, cute little creek on the other, right where we have major events. I think someday this corner could be something special. And if I won the lottery, I'd be coming and say, can I buy that? Because I think you could do something with it. True, that's almost what it would take, but I don't want to give up that vision yet. When in the face of there's so many other areas that are much higher priority for putting staff time into. And so I couldn't support a change in zoning when it already goes against our longstanding policy. Maybe, you know, after, let's see what happens when the state highway improvements are made, and let's see, as we know, as mentioned by Councilwoman Moreno, yeah, we looked at the Creekside building for a while, but when we got the 41-101 overpass in, we got the Lewis Avenue Bridge in, we got a parking, we got a transit center in, we got the walking bridge over, and then all of a sudden, yeah, we'll do a upscale boutique hotel. We'll move the chamber office and have in a whole, what do you call, co-working location. Thank you, Heather Moreno. We're seeing these things happen after we make that kind of investment. Well, State of California is going to invest $8 million in Highway 41. Let's see what happens after that. We can certainly put this on hold for a few years, I think, and let's see if we, what our vision is for Highway 41, much like we went through the process for El Camino. So I won't be here long, but I suggest you wait and see, and maybe you'll be surprised like we've been surprised elsewhere. So with that, I'll turn it over to someone to give us some direction to staff. Where do you want to go with this?
Well, I have a question, actually.
Go ahead.
In the recommendation, it talks about table, and it talks about until such a time as the updates, you know, the citywide general plan land use map. What can you just clarify that, please, what that means? Is this that we're not, is it saying that we're, if we accept the recommendation, then at that point in time, we will consider this again, or what does this look like?
So what it looks like, basically, is we're not, you're not giving staff direction to proceed this year with a general plan amendment. We can basically put this on a tentative list to examine this property when we do a citywide general plan update. We don't have a date for that yet.
Thank you.
The alternative, though, would be to table it, but not necessarily for that long, because we're not looking to do that until, what, 2020 or beyond, correct?
Correct. There's no date set for that
right.
yet.
Versus we probably in about a year or so might be looking at the El Camino corridor what to do with commercial properties there, correct? I mean, is it realistic that a year from now we'd be looking at?
Yeah, so that's the other option, is the council could say, hey, come back sooner than the citywide update, but maybe when you're done with the El Camino Real study at such a time, let's see how we are, let's do a check-in and see where we are. So you can certainly authorize that as an alternative.
One note about that, because we are talking about the investment Caltrans is making, that's not coming till 1920. So to come back in a year, we still haven't had those improvements.
It'll be later than 1920.
Well, 19/20.
Okay.
19/20. Right. 2019/2020.
Yeah, I understood what you meant.
Thank you.
Okay.
You know, I just wouldn't want to say hold off necessarily all the way until you have a citywide general plan update, because that could be way, way, way in the future. And other than, you know, we spent a fair amount of time talking about this evening, I just wouldn't want to prejudice the owner from at least coming back and asking the question in a year or two or something like that. I don't want to tell him, no, don't come back in 5 years or something. I'm for holding off on it, but not necessarily for that long.
So I would look to a council member to kind of sum up consensus direction for staff.
All right. So I think that what I would say is I would move staff's recommendation that we table this until, you know, such time. Either we do the general plan update and look at that in a few years, or we have this potential that something's coming along Morrow Road and that's getting fixed up and we see something could come, or if something comes from the corridor study, I think it's leaving it partly up to your discretion to say, hey, it's really making sense based upon these other factors to take another look at this. Does that help?
I agree. One of those three things you just mentioned, either the corridor study, the Caltrans improvements on that, or the citywide general plan update, that one of those three things would be an appropriate trigger point for us to readdress it.
Do I have a second then?
I can second that.
We have a motion by Councilman Moreno, seconded by Councilman Sturdivant. Councilmember Burbeau. And I think that's clear enough that everyone would understand what that means. Does staff have any question about that motion? Is that sufficient direction for you? Roll call, please.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Burbeau?
Yes.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you. And as often is the case, if anyone has trouble interpreting what the heck the council is talking about, staff are pretty good. They have a direction. I encourage what has been done already. Work with staff. We give a lot of confidence to them and trust their input. And if they have some suggestions, it would be good advice. So thank you, staff, for taking the approach that you did. And we'll move on to the next agenda item, which is another request for authorization to process a general plan amendment for 5705 Alameda that is not going to be heard tonight. And I will, I don't know that we need to say anything else. I will open it up to the public if anyone has anything to comment on that item. We did have it on the agenda. We said we'd at least talk about it. So this would be the time for input on that item. And no one approaching. We did get some testimony earlier that will be carried forward to when it is back on the agenda. So I'll move on from that item. We have no manager reports. It takes us to council announcements and reports. I'm just going to go from my left to my right. Anything you have to say on any topic, I'll go ahead and combine both for tonight.
Mr. Mayor, as you know, Friday, March 2nd, I attended the mayor's meeting on your behalf in Pismo Beach. Very nice new hotel they hosted it at, with a very nice rooftop view of the ocean and the pier. Very jealous, of course, as we all are, of the transient occupancy tax collected by Pismo Beach. But in any case, they were going to send out the attachments to the city manager so that you might be able to see those. I don't know, if you received those or not. Jim Lewis, the city manager of Pismo Beach, was going to send those out.
Yes, they did.
Discussed PERS pension issues and where the League of Cities in particular stands on some of those things. And some other issue that the League of Cities is asking cities to endorse. It did get a little league update sheet I can pass along, but it was interesting, and I appreciate the opportunity to represent you at that meeting.
Thank you.
I just want to give a final announcement about Dancing with Our Stars. I think there are still some tickets available for Thursday night, so that is next Thursday, Friday, Saturday, March 22nd, 23rd, 24th. And it's I think many of you know it's become a much bigger fundraiser. It used to be just for the library, and that was big enough, and now there are seven different nonprofits that are all benefiting from the Atascadero Historical Society, Friends of the Atascadero Lake, Quota International, RISE, the Gray Bots, Mercer Sanchez Scholarship Fund, and of course still the library. So a lot of great organizations to support, and so if you haven't been before, you gotta go. Let's see what else. The EBC, we've been looking at the basically the economic study that needs to be done due to the closure of Diablo, and I know they will be coming to all of the jurisdictions and looking for funding to help with this. They're still kind of putting together the timeline and what are the specifics so all of us can really make an informed decision when that comes before us. So that's probably in a month or so. And I've been talking about co-working the past 5 months, and if you haven't heard, it's coming thanks to the Chamber moving their office, and co-working will be coming to Atascadero to the Creekside building this summer, so looking forward to that.
Thank you. Go ahead, Brian.
No report.
No report. I don't have a lot to say other than president of San Luis Council of Governments. I'm on a number of committees where we've been meeting a little more up in Sacramento. The big question will be what happens with Senate Bill 1. If that comes or goes away, that will have a significant impact on infrastructure and funding. And the Slocock Board is taking great effort to be cautious about planning for the future. There's a few vacancies with a transition with our executive director that's been there for about 38 of the 40 or so years. Is it 50 now, maybe? I think it's the 50th anniversary of Slocog this year. So that's going to be cautious in taking a look at that with so many potential changes. And the good news is there are a couple of funding categories that we see about. We got one with a 17% increase that will be an impact to local roads. So I think there is some short-term good news for the city of Atascadero on progress on local roads anyway. We continue to be struggling with the recycling programs countywide, statewide, nationwide. There's problems with that, and I don't see any solutions coming up quickly, but it is something we continue to work on. One thing we've tackled that's a concern to us in the downtown, we did have, when I was last up in Sacramento, we met with the director, state director appointed by the governor, Brown, of the Alcohol, Beverage, and Control organization, and he kept his promise from our Sacramento trip. He met us down here, right in this very building, along with the regional director and the folks in the San Luis office. We've got serious concerns about their interpretation of some of the rules as it applies to some of our downtown businesses, especially restaurants. We're going to bat for our local businesses. We hope to make some progress. We've got good support from the state level. I think we need to keep having to dialogue with some of our local ABC folks, because we don't want to have more restrictions on our businesses in our city than any other city as we currently have. And we think there's some misconceptions. We don't want to overly preserve our less activity in the downtown. We want to have more activity in our downtown, restaurants staying open later, et cetera, like Pismo, Paso, San Luis. So we are taking that seriously, and we'll keep you updated on that. Staff is doing a good job. Our city manager is going to bat for our businesses darn near every day. So thank you, staff. That concludes my remarks. Any staff have anything to say? Chief, anything to say?
Just we had the women's conference over the weekend. It was great to see Councilwoman Marino there
emceeing
the event, and I thought she might want to mention that. So,
thank you for reminding me. It was in my. I don't write these down. I just in my head. I'm going to say these things, and I forgot. Yes, somewhere between 300 and 400 women. The ladies' conference. Both chiefs, Haley and Bryson, were there to help with security. 36th annual, quite impressive, and some of our local businesses that contribute to that. Kelly's Casuals is always giving something for the giveaway. Holiday Inn Express gives a nice rate to the women that are coming from out of town, and just a fantastic weekend. So, yeah, thank you for the reminder, Chief.
Very good. I think with that we are adjourned. Thank you.
So who at 8:15?